Inside. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Today we're going to address some of the very serious issues of developments in Sweden when it comes to gang rapes. There actually have been several admissions by mainstream media in the last couple of days in terms of the background, the ethnicity of those committing gang rapes, the majority in Sweden. Of course, this is issues that many people that have been talking about, anti-immigrant, anti-open border activists, anti-globalist activists have been talking about for years now, that this is one of the problems when you have incompatible cultures and people from other religions being let into ours when we have these massive crime waves as a result of that. So we're going to kind of deconstruct this a bit today, and we have with us on the line Tobias Lindberg from the Information War and also Simon Holmqvist from the Nordic Resistance Movement. So thank you for coming on, gentlemen. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Awesome, guys. So let's talk a little bit first about the Expressen article before we have a lot of things lined up here today. But let me show you this. This is actually one of the articles that we republished from Expressen talking about this issue, that it's actually the mainstream news finally are admitting to the fact that practically every gang rape is done by men with migrant backgrounds. And the study, more directly, this was just concerning 2016 and 2017, and the study found that 32 of the 43 men sentenced for gang rape are immigrants, with a further 8 being born in Sweden, but with 2 parents who were born abroad. A further 2 offenders were born in Sweden to 1 immigrant and 1 Swedish parent, with just 1 offender born in Sweden to parents who were born both in Sweden. But as we kind of talked about before we came on here, that could actually be, according to the laws, right, the stipulations, that if they're second-hand or third-generation immigrant, or second- or third-generation immigrant, they might actually be an immigrant, right? It's just that Sweden dictates that these people are Swedish if they are second-generation. But how do you guys look at this, that Expressen, a mainstream Swedish paper, finally is coming out admitting more or less to something like this? It's taken a few years, hasn't it, guys?
Yes, it has. It's a little bit of a surprise when they several years have attacked us for being racist, and now they get around completely like this. One wonder what the reason is, why they turn around like this.
Well, what do you think? Because I mean, that's a good point, as you said. I'm still angry with it. It's good that they're finally highlighting it and stuff like that, but we should not sit here and praise the mainstream press all of a sudden, or even Expressen, because they're still guilty in helping to cover these issues up and denying it for years and years and years. And as I said in one of my comments to the article, that the damage has already been done. This has contributed to a lot of young, naive Swedish girls not actually knowing about the background, therefore not being able to look out after themselves, etc. But I mean, on an end summary, if you will, it's obviously good. But what do you think, Simon? Why are they coming out and all of a sudden talking about this and highlighting this?
Well, the background was actually, I think, it was a very a gang rape in Uppsala in Sweden, where I think it was a very brutal gang rape, and the persons who they charged for it, I think it was mainly Somalians. They were freed from the charges, and the media wrote a lot about this, and also, of course, the feminists were kind of upset about it. So I think that was the background why they did this story. They looked at the cases, I think, from last year, and tried to make some sense out of it. I think it's a question of everyone knows that gang rapes were unheard of in Sweden before Sweden became multicultural. So I think if they would try to hide it, the attacks from the people would be too harsh. So I think it was a bit of damage control, because if you read in the article, that they tried to walk around the question, because they admit that, of course, these people were non-Swedes, but it's not a question about race or anything. It's socio-economical factors behind it, and they have some experts telling them that no, it's because they are poor, they're from poor neighborhoods, and they don't have opportunities. And they also try to connect it to crimes in general. They say that the people who commit these kind of crimes are often have a background in like gangs or other type of criminality. So I think they have to admit it, but they have to walk around it and try to come up with some kind of explanation for this. So it's not like they are saying straight out, this is a problem we have because of mass immigration. Instead, they say they are non-Swedes, but it's because society is unjust to them and so on.
Yeah, it's true. I think it's damage control, right? They have to, at some point, I mean, the mainstream is losing so much credibility, and at some point they have to start recognizing the reality, or they know that people are just going to walk away altogether from it. I mean, alternative media has gained incredibly in Sweden in the last couple of years, and I think that they're realizing that they have to start addressing it. I think it's the same with the Gothenburg paper as well, GP. They've who I think is owned by the same company as Expressen, by the way, and they've also kind of entered into this path a little bit more. Obviously, as I said, a net positive, yes, absolutely, but it's a little bit too late, I feel.
Yeah, it's too late. Everyone in Sweden knows this by now, and. And of course, the alternative media has written about this a lot, and they are also, as you said, we have pages like Gang Rape Sweden, and there was also a Sweden Democrat who made some. He made his own statistics around this, and everything points at the same conclusion. There's almost no Swedes who are convicted for this kind of crimes. I guess if you would find a Swede who is convicted for gang rape, it's usually like some kind of drunken party and people who get involved in sexual things that they are not comfortable with. It's more like that. But when it comes to this kind of gangs attacking a lonely woman in the street, it's unheard of that a Swede would do anything like that. I can't think of one case where a Swede has been convicted for that kind of crime.
Yeah, Tobias, jump in here.
Yeah, my first thought when I read the article from Expressen here was that they some kind of way tried to gain back some credibility, but so I think that's one of the factors why they wrote this article. But then we have, it's election year this year, and then they also now try to attack Google and YouTube, Expressen's owners, the Bonnier family. It's a Jewish family here in Sweden who owns a very big part of the newspapers and media in Sweden. And maybe they try to, if they, under a period, write article like this, maybe people don't get as angry when they try to stop freedom of expression by shutting down YouTube videos. So maybe they try to compensate for that or something. And then when they have succeeded with the shutting down of freedom of expression, then they maybe go back to earlier when they didn't wrote articles like this. So maybe it's just temporary, I think.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it was the Gransk Ningsverige, the Review Sweden, the other YouTube channel that was shut down, of course, that were specifically targeted by Bonnier, who kind of went straight to YouTube and basically said, and I think even what I did right here of just showing the article potentially could be used as a copyright infringement. it's like ridiculous, but that's what they were going for. So who knows, maybe just me showing that is not a good idea. I'm not sure. But yeah, we'll have to see how, what comes out of those studies, but I think it's very interesting. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of this, guys, and actually talk about the article that you guys wrote for Nord Front, the Nordic Resistance Movement, who did this, of course, as I said, together with Gang Rape Sweden. And there was Tell us first, Simon, I know that you have some more information about this in terms of what happened to the guy who was behind that website. He was the one who initially had the database on all these crimes. He published it, and at some point he was charged, I think, and he ended up having to pull it or something. Explain that to us again.
Yes. In the end of this Expressen article, it's a woman named Stina Holmberg. It's a little bit interesting because she was one of the researchers when it's an institute in Sweden who is called BRÅ, Brottsförebyggande rådet, Crime Preventing Council or something maybe.
Right. Yep.
It's called. It's a research institute. So they have done two reports, research papers on crimes of immigrants, and they did the first one in 1996 and the second one in 2005, and she was one of the researchers. And in that these two papers, they talked about this that socioeconomic factors, it was a factor in crimes of immigrants, but it wasn't all. It was just a little bit. So when they compensate for these socioeconomic factors, such as crime, age, gender, and if they were unemployed and such. So when they compensate for that, their overrepresentation just went down a little bit. And in this article, she repeats this as they always do, that it's the socioeconomic factors. So they go on as usual. Even when she did this research, they go with the same lie.
Exactly. Again. And also, let's focus on this a little bit, guys, that, you know, there's no, despite these findings, there's no effort to try to do further studies on this and say, okay, well, let's try to get to the root of this. Let's try to figure out what's going on. And also, people who have been talking about this have obviously been convicted of hate crimes. They've been kind of, you know, persecuted in some regards by the authorities. What happens now to those people? Are they going to come out and apologize to them and say, "Oh, we're sorry, you were right. You were, you know, we know that you were talking about this." But people like us have simply been ahead of the curve, warned about this. What's going to happen to us, right?
I think they're just going to pretend that it's raining. I don't think. Yeah. They will never apologize or say anything like that. They will probably say, yeah, we knew it was like this, but even if these kind of crimes are that immigrants are overrepresented in these kind of crimes, it has nothing to do with ethnicity and or race or religion or anything. It's just, you know, socioeconomical factors. And basically what they say is that in these areas who are filled with immigrants, this no-go zones, this the suburbs of the larger cities in Sweden. Basically, they're saying if these areas were filled with Swedes, they would be the one who would be doing the gang raping. That's what they are saying, basically. Yeah. So they will never admit that it's a question about race, because let's face it, gang raping it's not a behavior that is. That is common in a civil society.
Right.
I guess in wartime, when an army conquers a new land, sometimes the soldiers, they take the women and gang rape them. We have seen this, and it's horrible. It's kind of a occupational behavior, so to speak.
And yeah, I think final that's nail exactly in that coffin. Like, we defeated you. Now we're going to like literally have our children are going to be born by your women, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You you saw that with of course with the Soviet army invading Germany in World War II. That was the gang rape was a big part of the strategy of you know breaking down. It's the same thing here, because the immigrants who commit these kind of crimes, who are mostly from Africa or the Middle East, they feel like conquerors often. They often have a racist view, if you will, on Swedes. And, you know, taking the Swedish women like this, I think it's a way for them to signal that we are conquering these lands, I think. So the behavior, I think it's a show of strength, and it's kind of a way of humiliating the Swedes when they gang rape the Swedish women, because it's a very humiliating way of you know doing it.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, we should talk about this issue that many of these people would not be able to do what they do if we didn't have an elite in Sweden that were letting these people in. I don't know how they can believe that they somehow are like winning or conquering us when simply we haven't even begun to fighting back yet. Most Swedes don't even know that it's that this is a fight of territory. This is an expansion, maybe as they see it, of their religion or something like that. But surely they would never be able to do what they did if our politicians and our elites didn't let these people in, right, guys?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we always have to look at the politicians and the people who are responsible for making this happen, because the mass immigration to Sweden or to Europe, the people who are coming, the immigrants, they are actually just, you know, following their urges. They want to be where you can have a good life. Of course, if your country is poor and it's you know, they're struggling with war and corruption and crime, and then someone tells them you can go to Sweden and they will give you this and that, of course they want to go. It's the politicians who are the problem, or if you go even further, the people who control the politicians, the globalists. You can see it like in our own radio show. I talked about the man with the pariahs. If you have a man who holds, you know, a big bucket full of pariahs, and he comes with it to a pool where there's children playing, and he puts these pariahs in the pool, the pariahs will attack. But the pariahs are only, you know, acting in like pariahs. The problem, of course, is the man coming with the pariahs to the pool. So I don't mean to compare immigrants with pariahs, but it's you have to go to the source, the politicians who opened the borders, who made this happen. And in Sweden, it's like everyone knows there's a problem. When there's a gang rape in the news, the newspaper, they never, you know, write that you know, immigrants did this. But everyone knows it. Everyone knows it. But yeah, No one dares to speak up about it. So and the politicians, they are helping to uphold this kind of, you know, silence culture. It's like a terror silence culture. You can't speak up. You might lose your job. Your friends might turn against you, even your family. So the crimes that they are committing against their own people, I would say, are very severe.
Absolutely.
So it's important to have this in mind.
Simon, that's a good point, because, you know, we have to recognize that somehow there is a different climate and a different environment that these people come from. This is, of course, what the liberals and you know, the progressive, the globalist doesn't want to admit. They say that we're all the same. We you know, it's just these minor cultural values or whatever, but there's a significant difference. And in many cases, these people come from countries where these kinds of crimes are heavily punished, a physical punishment for doing these kinds of things. You know, people are, they're hung and they're whipped and stoned and flogged and all kinds of things. And the fact is, the reality is that when they come into a liberal Western country such as Sweden, they also know on some level that there is no level of punishment there. We are mollycoddling, as the British say, you know, with these people. And we're thinking that if we just give them more money or housing, or, you know, it's our fault, we're not taking care of them good enough, that it's all our issues, right? But if there was some level of severe punishment, it would potentially ease off the issue. Of course, that's not the solution. The solution is to repatriate these people back to their own countries again. That would create a far more peaceful scenario and a far more going forward in the future, easier you know, way for us to live, to live our lives. But regardless, you know, if we just look at the short-term problem, having punishments in place, do you guys think that would ease some of the just rampant, out of control raping, sexual abuse, and gang rapes that we've seen in Sweden in the last few years?
Yes, I think so. But as you said, it's repatriation that is the way to go. Punishment, as we have it in the West, almost only is prison and such kind of punishment. We don't have bodily punishment, so I don't.
It's like they're talking about like education, right? They need to be educated. I mean, I've heard Swedish politicians talk about this. Like and they've even said that it's worse that Swedish men does it because they've been taught that it's wrong, right? So these people haven't been taught that it's wrong. Therefore, it's not really their fault.
I don't think it's a question about. I guess harder punishments would be just they. If you commit this kind of crimes, you should be punished very hard, of course. But I don't think it will help. I mean, the system is rotten at its core, and a multicultural society like the one we have in Sweden, it's just not working. I think these people don't really they don't stop and think about if this is wrong or not. I think they feel it's their right to you know. Take the women, the Swedish women, like they want to, because they are the new masters of this country, and so on. And I think the Expressen article is right. The people who the immigrants who do commit these kind of crimes are often they have a criminal background. In Sweden, we have this a lot of immigrant gangs. They are, you know. It's a bit like organized crime, but they're not so organized like if you compare to the Italian mafia or something like that. But they are organized. They sell drugs. They run protection. They extortion and so on. They are very you can just look at this guy. He's probably a hardened criminal who has committed a lot of crimes before he committed the gang rape. So they live in their own world with their own rules, and they are driven by racism against Swedes.
Yeah, ethnic hatred, for sure.
Yeah, because if you talk to Swedish women, you know that those who are the blondest and the most blue-eyed girls, they are the ones who are in the most danger, because like gangs. Immigrants are, you know, shouting at them and harassing them the most. So it is some kind of hatred. It's about power. I don't even think it's so much about sexuality, but you know, humiliating the Swedes by gang raping their women. I think that's the main issue here.
Is there also some ethnic interest, an ethnic component that it's also genetically they see this as a kind of a win for them to just expand their group, basically, right? Of on one end, sure, utilizing the other and kind of removing their traits and all this kind of stuff. But there could be some. What I'm saying is that there could be on some base level, whether that's subconscious or not, I don't know. But there could be basically like their group is the superior one, and therefore they seek to kind of, you know, dominate and expand their people, if you will. That's a possibility, I think.
Sure. I mean, they live when they're living like criminals. They're, I think they view themselves as some kind of soldiers, and as I said, gang rapes it's almost unheard of in a European context, except sometimes in wartime where you have seen this. So I think when people experience that they are occupying a land or that they are in a war. And they have an enemy, I think that's when this kind of behavior is somehow lured out from the person. I don't think it's very national even in the Middle East. I don't think people go around gang raping each other there either. And as you said, if they did, they would be the punishments would be severe. So I don't know. I think it's the situation where you have different kind of people from the other part of the world coming to Sweden, mixing, and it's just a natural stage. It's everything goes wrong, and you know it's kind of like we're in the middle of a war, and that brings this kind of behavior forth, and you can see it also. I guess I think in the USA, isn't it also more common that black it's black people who gang rape white women there as well?
Yeah,
it's also a problem with the multicultural society. They didn't even just get to the United States. They didn't move from Africa to a white country. They have been there for generations. But still, we have this kind of behavior.
Exactly. Good point, Tobias.
But even in war times, I thought about what you said about the Russians when they invaded Germany.
Those weren't Russians, by the way.
No, exactly. the most of the rapes was done by
like Mongols.
More Asian parts of the Soviet armies.
Yeah.
So it was a clearly ethnical difference there. The European Russians, they behaved better than the others. So even in wartime, I think if you are from the same race, you behave better against them.
Towards the other, for sure. Yeah, it's very interesting, guys. I mean, it's horrifying, but at least we're getting some level of exposure, and at least it's starting to loosen. And as I said, I'm still incredibly disappointed, angry, and just frankly, the mainstream media, the mainstream press in Sweden is complicit. They're complicit in the crime levels that we've seen. They're raising it because they have denied it, and as I said before, they've helped to create very naive Swedish young women, incredibly young in some cases, right? Where if they had a preset, if they were in fact discriminatory, if they were discriminating based on ethnicity, they would have at least in the back of their mind saying it's more likely that this guy is going to be part of a gang rape than this guy, right? And if they could have made that distinction, maybe that would have saved some of these girls. But in the country where the Me Too movement have just blossomed equally, which is absurd, they don't actually have any consideration for these young women when it comes down to it. The priority here is immigrant men coming in, and these little girls are second, third, fourth down the line of terms of victims, right?
Yeah, the problem is also that the Swedish men are weak. They're feminized by, they have been indoctrinated since they were children with, you know, feminism, and they are being told that they have to be feminine and they can't be, you know, masculine. So the Swedish men have been, you know, almost they're nothing, and of course women, they have a biological urge to follow, you know, the alpha male. And you can see, if you walk around in a Swedish city today, you see girls as young as 11, 12, 13, they're following, you know, these immigrant men from Afghanistan or Somalia or Iraq or what have you. They're following them because these guys, they're coming from a more masculine culture.
Yeah, he'll pay your bills and take care of your mortgage for you, no doubt. Anyway, go on, Simon.
It's not a rational process for them. The Swedish man has been, have been a kind of warfare against the man in Swedish society. Sweden is more cultural Marxist than I think most other Western countries. So that's also a problem. The Swedish man has to rise up and protect the Swedish women, and they have to show that they are able to lead them too. Otherwise, Swedish women will continue to follow the immigrants, and they will lead themselves into very dangerous situations again and again and again.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, there is a level of kind of perfect storm, as they call it. There are all these issues that are coinciding, right? As we get more liberalized and weaker, then you bring in a hostile immigrant population and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know how orchestrated and engineered all this is. My conspiratorial part of me tends to think that it's all kind of engineered. It could be coincidental. I don't know. But certainly when you begin talking about, you know, dressing little boys as girls in class, and there's no, you know, all the gender neutral pronouns and all this kind of stuff, it's all just perfect timing to create the scenario that we have now. And I actually want to, I don't want to confuse the debate, but let's talk about this a little bit in terms of, you know, the redefinition of rape and how the legal structure in Sweden have sought, I think, on one end to deal with the issue, which is to redefine the terms and stuff like this. Here's a, like a 1 minute, 40 second clip from RT that talks about this, the recent change in this, which is kind of interesting. I thought we could listen to this, guys, and get your comment on this.
A new sexual consent bill in Sweden is proposing to increase the punishment for rape. The plans handed to Parliament on Tuesday revised the list of sexual crimes.
That's different from current legislation, where it has to be shown that there was violence, a threat, force, or that the plaintiff was in a particularly vulnerable situation. We have not, however, changed the basic principle that it's willingness which decides if it's an act of abuse or not.
There will no longer be a need to prove intent in rape, for example. Meanwhile, sexual consent must now be verbal or via clear actions. As mentioned, punishment for perpetrators is also being increased. However, no changes to evidence standards were proposed. Now, it comes amid a 10% rise in the number of rape crimes in the country in just a year. However, Danish journalist Ivan Tranholm fears that if passed, the law will only increase the number of false accusations.
I think it is a way to send some political signals, because this law will change the definition of what is rape. And now a man has to prove that there was a total consent from the woman. It can be easier to accuse a man of rape. There are rapes going on that is never reported because there's no evidence. So this could actually help a lot of women to come out and make accusations. But what could also happen is that there will be a lot of false accusations. And, you know, just having sexual activity could be like entering a courtroom.
I think that last comment is kind of interesting, that at the same time as we have a massive increase in rapes and all that stuff, it's a redefinition which helps to drive up the number of rapes on one hand, right? So I've always said, it's due to the redefinition that they're trying to hide the real numbers of what's happening, right? But then you have issues like this where basically, who is this going to apply to? Probably just normal Swedish guys, right? The law like this, where they can, like, every little move that they try to make will be seen as rape, while we have gang rapists and many of these others incoming. That is, many cases we've seen these guys, they just walk scot-free. There's no punishment. There's no, proper dealing with this issue from the authorities, and they just let these guys go. What do you guys think about watching a clip like this?
When they change the definitions like this, I kind of wonder if it's because they want to charge more Swedish men, maybe, because Swedes doesn't in the same amount do rapes in the bushes and such. Assault rapes, violent rapes and such. So, because when Swedes is charged with rapes and is sentenced with rapes, it's very often they have been in a party and they drunk and they misunderstand. Exactly. Yeah. So they have sex and they had different opinions about what happened. It's not very much of that kind of assault rapes and such. But the migrants very often is charged with that and sentenced for those kinds. So I think it's maybe they want to confuse things about who is doing the rapes with this new definition.
Yeah, there's this one famous case, guys. Remember, he was like lying behind a girl, I think, or something, and he had a hard on and he was like charged with rape, you know, while again these others walk free.
Yeah, this new law it actually came after the Me Too campaign,
exactly,
which was huge in Sweden. Actually, some very feminists lost their jobs because of the Me Too campaign in Sweden, because of course it was showed that these feminist men who are like journalists and there was some comedians and so on, they acted towards women in a very foul way, and some of them are even accused of raping women. I think this new consent law, it won't make a difference when it comes to gang rapes or assault rapes, because it's not about that. What they're trying to do here is to say that if a woman, a part of the new law is, if a woman is in a situation of dependence to the man, it can be rape, since she might not feel that she's able to say no. So, like, if a boss has sex with an employee who is a woman, that might be rape, even if there's no violence or anything. If she hasn't said, you know, clearly out, I want to do this, the law says it might be rape, because she is in a situation of dependence to him. And at the same time, you could go as far as say, if a couple is married and the woman perhaps makes less money, she is in an economical dependence towards the man, and if he has sex with her, it might be rape. If you want to take it that far, but, you know, in theory, you might be able to do that, because, of course, a wife who make less money than her husband, she is in some way in a dependent situation towards him. So this law is you know, aimed at Swedish men. They want to convict more people for rape, because people feel that there's a problem with rape in society. Rape has, you know, there's more rapes than ever. There's gang rapes, and they want to see people behind bars. But instead,
it would distribute it too, Simon. That's a good point. It would distribute it so that it would include Swedish males, and that would be like the false accusations, the bullshit accusations. But statistically, they can just say, "See, it's across the board. There's no difference." It's kind of it's clever, isn't it? It's very clever.
Yeah, it sure is. Exactly. And I think, I mean, I remember me and Tobias had a long discussion about this law, what it actually means. It's not 100% clear, and a lot of lawyers has criticized it, because they don't know what will happen when they implement this new law. But it's clear that the problem with false accusations will grow when they move the burden of evidence more and more towards that. If you're accused of rape, you almost have to prove your innocence.
Exactly.
I think, wasn't it something that, like that, Tobias, that you had to not prove that you didn't do it, but something like that. What was it?
Yeah, you should kind of motivate why you think the women wanted to have sex.
Oh, my God.
So you have to have a good explanation. You don't have to prove it, but
wow. So guys, before we move on, I just wanted to show you, we actually had a Swedish theater director who actually committed suicide. This is just a couple of days ago, but it's a good example of just how bad things can go, how wrong things can go when you're actually falsely accused. It actually came out afterwards that this Me Too movement in Sweden had, you know, it's been ramped up to such a fever pitch that they just accused people left and right. And before there was even like a settled deal, really, whether this guy, Benny Fredriksson at the Kulturhuset, at the Culture House, the main theater in Stockholm in Sweden, the director of that, he ended up actually killing himself. And then afterwards, it came out that he was innocent. So it's not just that these people are accusing, and it's good with that. It actually has real-life consequences. People are killing themselves over this.
Yeah, and I think afterwards, it was shown that there was a media campaign against this guy, but none of the allegations were even true. So no one really accused him of anything either. It was just the media who wrote it up like that. So he was portrayed like a sex criminal.
All right, so let's switch over, guys, and actually talk about the article on Nordfront. Simon, you know the case very well. Help us to understand what happened here.
Yeah, it was like this. We at Nordfront a source handed over information about everyone who had been convicted and to jail between, I think it was 2001 and to 2016 or something like that. Every jail sentence with like information about placements in different jails and so on. So we had we had this information and we wanted to make statistics from it. And we were in contact with this guy who is the main actor behind this website, Gang Rape Sweden, who we knew he was good at making statistics. So we handed it over to him, and he made some good statistics that Tobias wrote about there that showed the overrepresentation when it came to not just gang rapes but the crimes in general. From the immigrants, but Gang Rape Sweden, of course, is not in Sweden. You can publish this kind of information if you're a registered newspaper. Gang Rape Sweden was not, so he was actually charged. Someone reported him to the police for crimes against the Swedish Data Protection Act. So he had to take the website down. So the database is not online at this moment. But I can actually reveal now that it will come back online under Nordfront this time. And Nordfront is, of course, a registered newspaper. So according to the Data Protection Act, we are allowed to publish this kind of information. So it will come back online in the near future. With everything else that Gang Rape Sweden has done. He made statistics regarding rapes, where he showed, for instance, when it comes to gang rapes, that around 90% of the perpetrators were immigrants, non-Swedes, and that's, you know, he measured very conservative there. It's hard to go into the details exactly who is a Swede or not. You have to go in. You have to, you know, like, check the name and it's not always possible to determine race in every case if you don't go into the specific person and look at him. But anyway, he showed that when it came to crimes in general, immigrants were overrepresented if you compare to Swedes. And Tobias, you wrote this article. You might want to talk about what the statistics showed, so to speak.
Yes. First of all, it was a really big set of data. This it was 168,000 sentence decisions,
right?
Under a period of 10 years, and it was about 83,600 individuals that the decisions was about. And of them, there was 45,900 Swedes and 37,700 non-Swedes. And when we have around in the beginning of this period in 2004, it was about 22% non-Swedes living in Sweden. And in the end of the period in 2015, it was about 28%. So when you have that numbers, when you have 45,000 Swedes who these decisions is about, and 37,000, it's a very big overrepresentation on the non-Swedes. And this is all crimes. So of all court decisions with jail, it was about 42% of them that was non-Swedes. And of all person who has sentenced to jail, so the non-Swede was about 45% of them. And of all, I don't know what you call it, person year, every year in jail, of a person, the non-Swede represented 50% of all the year in jail.
So served time, I think you say served time,
right?
Yeah, if you convert all the sentence for all the people who is sentenced to jail, and then if you converted to year in prison per person, then non-Swedes stood for 50% of them. So it the overrepresentation
it's huge.
It's bigger, yeah. When it's
when you adjust for the population.
Yeah, and when you look at the sentence in jail that is longer, up to 9 and 10 years, the overrepresentation landed at the 70% on non-Swede.
So that means heavier crime, like violent crimes and kind of heavier crimes, they're just completely overrepresented on those fronts. Yeah. Well, you see, this is an economic boon to Sweden to have these immigrants. They're gonna take care of us when we get old. You see that? That's what's going on here. No, but and also it's worth to point out, guys, that this is of course official data. You know, again, this comes from the Crime Prevention Bureau, BRO in Sweden. And also one thing I was interested in, so the database that gangrapesweden.com used, was that an official database that anyone can get to, or did he have access to something which you normal people, so to speak, don't have access to, guys?
You can get the information. In Sweden, we have this principle in the constitution that almost anything have to be public. But to get this kind of information, you have it's hard to get it like this, because you have to know certain things. You have to know what to look for. You have to make request after request to the government to get this information. But the information came to Nordfront at first. We had a source who I can't go into detail, because we can't really talk about the sources, but he had access to this information like it was, so he delivered it to us more or less, and we asked this guy from Gang Rape Sweden to help us to make sense of this information. So it's not you know, hidden, but if you want to get the information from scratch, it's very hard work, because you have to have you have to know what to look for, so to speak.
Right.
When you get it like this, it's much easier to make sense of it. So it was handed over to us for this specific purpose, you could say.
Well, this is interesting too, in connection to, I just came across it the other day, that they're trying to change. We don't have a constitution in Sweden. We have a kind of a version of that. We call it a foundational law, which supposedly is supposed to be more difficult to change or whatever. But that there is a proposal to change these things right now, and they have to do with freedom of expression, freedom of speech. It also has to do in terms of what you can publish. And I think the proposition to change this foundational law, it also has one part of it has to do with this access for private people can get access to official, you know, publications and actions, including databases over court cases and stuff like that. So it seems that the people in the know are trying to prevent that this kind of information gets out there. It's basically we're, you know, in true Stasi fashion, and true Maoist fashion, they're trying to lock down things even more. In other words, too much information, guys, have been coming out lately, and too many people can find the clues and connect the dots themselves. And the Swedish government is basically in the process of proposing to shut this ability down altogether.
Yeah, The change in the as you say, it's not a constitution, it's something similar, but the proposed change is that only serious media outlets are able to handle this. Media outlets are able to handle this kind of information. So
like those, for instance, like those who lie about rape for 10 years.
Exactly. Those who are not those who are not interested in this kind of information are able to handle it.
Yeah.
So for instance, it probably won't matter that Nordfront is a registered newspaper with that. According to the law now, we have the same rights as Expressen or any other newspaper. But when they pass this new law, it will probably it's not clear, and there have been a lot of discussions about what this will mean in reality. But probably we won't be able to handle this kind of information when they pass this law.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. They even say here on this website, and every Swede watching or listening to this should check it out. It's stoppagrundlagsendringen.com. It's stop the foundational lawchange.com. And they're talking here about that media companies like Schibsted and Bonniers and banks and, of course, the government will continue to have access to these databases. But normal mortals like ours, we will not. So it's crazy. I mean, guys, it's changing so fast in Sweden right now, and they're doing so many things to push back. But I still see it as a sign of a positivity, because it shows how afraid they are. I mean, the more a government is trying to subvert their population and clamp down on information getting out and stuff, I mean, that's historically the signs of a government that is losing its control over the population, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting right now. We have election year in Sweden, and I think we will come back to that later on, but. Right now, they're trying to push this agenda that if you're criticizing if you're a media, if you're an alternative media who are criticizing the government or criticizing the system, you're actually, you know, a Russian agent. We have a specific government branch that is called MSB in Swedish, Myndigheten för samhällsskydd och beredskap. That is the agency for protection of society and readiness or something like that. Mm-hmm, yeah. And they are pushing this agenda that the Russians is trying, even Putin himself is trying to interfere with the Swedish election, of course, as they have said about, you know, the American presidential election and France and so on. So now they're pushing this agenda that everyone who is like criticizing the system in itself, even if it's like pure journalism, It's like it comes from a foreign agent who has evil in has an evil, you mm-hmm. know, agenda.
Intention.
Yeah. So yeah, intention. So they're really you know bringing forth the big guns now and trying to stop everyone who is trying to have to stand in opposition against the madness.
God, the paranoia is so, just immense. And I've seen this about, I've actually seen this about myself in our own media outlet, that it's like somehow there was, I think it was DN, Dagens Nyheter, Today's News, that magazine, they were writing about it, and somehow, there was no proof offered, but somehow we were doing the bidding of Putin came up in this piece, and it was like surreal reading about yourself, you know, in a paper of like, you know, they didn't say that we like received money, but it was like almost that they were alluding to that resources are being funneled into these different, you know, nationalist groups in various European countries, and that we were part of that. And it's like, you're reading this stuff, and then like, I want people out there to understand this, like, all they have to do for them to write the truth and the reality, and like, you know, for something to end up on, let's say, Wikipedia or something like that, right, where the official history of like everything is put online, right? That's where people go. They check Wikipedia and whatever's there, that's the truth, right? So all they need to do is to do a couple of articles in mainstream papers, and then those become the referenced node points in the Wiki piece, you know, and they have pieces in there about where I live, which is not true. They have pieces in there, you know, where I've been or what I've done. It's nuts, you know. And you realize that these people are just liars. They just make shit up. But the Russian thing is pretty interesting. I think it's enough for us to like link to a story on RT or something like that, and that's enough proof to show that we are like Russian agents. I haven't seen more proof than that. Simon, anything to add to that?
Yeah, it stands on a very, you know, thin foundation. I remember some years ago we got a small contribution from a Russian organization to the Nordic resistance movement. It was more of a symbolic gesture. I think it was around like $100 or something like that. They wanted to show some kind of appreciation to us. And when we got that money, it was not much money. They have used that again and again and again in the media to show that we actually are financed from Russia, and they try to, you know, even if this group is in opposition to Putin, they want to connect it to Putin, and that Putin are actually paying us, you know, to do his work, and, you know, to make the Swedish system unstable and so on and so on. And what I think is frightening is that they're already talking about. They say that the Russians will interfere. They will put this information there. They will criticize the election process. They will criticize the counting of votes, that they will say there's something wrong about this. And that's very strange. Why would they say that already now? It's almost like they want to cheat during the election, but they're trying to make some damage control here. Beforehand point at, you know, a foreign superpower with you know, evil intentions. I don't know. It's very strange. It's the Swedish society has really fallen down into paranoia when it comes to these kind of questions.
And even the military buildup, the spending and stuff is coming back now, and it's like to stop a Russian invasion. I mean, they literally believe this stuff. They're nuts, you know.
Yeah, and of course, from the Nordic Resistance Movement and on Nord Front, we think it's funny to play with these kind of things.
It is always funny, yeah.
We send out signals like we found this energy drink, this Russian energy drink that's called Russian Power, and it's like a Viking on the bottle with a Russian shield or something like that. And all over social media, we wrote, "Oh, Putin is sponsoring us with his new energy drink, and we're going to win the election now," and so on. But they are catching. They take these signals and somehow they make it serious. I remember Aftonbladet, one of the main newspapers in Sweden. They wrote this article about we connected our on Nord Front. We connected the commentary system to VK, the Russian version of Facebook. So if you want to comment on Nord Front, you have to have an account on VK. And around this time, I tweeted that I have now registered at VK. It's a place where you can commit hate speech freely, and it's governed by Putin instead of Mordor, I said, you know, just to make a joke. And they actually took this tweet in the article as a proof that we are, you know, Russian agents.
Jesus, yeah, they don't understand, and they have no humor. Here it is. Here's the tweet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
they hilarious. Yeah, well, what can we do? We gotta continue to troll these people. They're no humor. They've no sense of anything left. They're so uptight, you know.
Yeah, they can't help it. They just have to, you know, they just have to go down on these kind of things. They can't help themselves. They are so occupied with this idea that Russia is trying to destroy the beautiful country of Sweden, who has no problems, by telling lies. And they say that Russia is telling lies about Sweden, that we have problems with immigration, that there's a lot of criminals running loose, and that there's no freedom of speech. Everything that they're saying that Russia is lying about is actually true. And everyone knows it. But they're saying these statements comes from Russia and they're lies, but everything is actually true. So
amazing.
it's like 1984.
Yep.
Some version of it. It's Orwellian, so to speak.
It's completely upside down. It's absolutely amazing. But you know what are we going to do? I've argued for some time that these people are literally, you know, they're not only paranoid. I mean, they're mentally unstable, and they're running our country completely into the ground. And I think it's up to normal, sensible people that have, you know, balance in their attitudes towards not only other countries and foreign policy, but internal politics and stuff like that. I mean, there's so many people that bring sensible positions of what to do about this immigration problem and how to solve all the crime and this stuff, but they just, you know, they won't see it. They're completely mentally unstable. And I think at some point, these people will have to be voted out of out of office. They have to be voted out of their positions. And we have to bring in sensible people into the positions of government and power. And speaking about that, guys, let's switch over a little bit and talk about the upcoming. We do have an upcoming 2018 election in Sweden. I guess actually before we talk about the election, we could talk about the 1st of May, because it's sooner in the chronology, so to speak. The Nordic Resistance Movement is putting on two demonstrations around Sweden at the same time. I guess that's a new precedence, a new high watermark, if you will, for the organization. Guys, tell us about this and where they will take place.
Yeah, so we on the 1st of May, we have had major demonstrations 2 years in a row. 2016, we had it in Borlänge in Dalarna, which is an important area for the Nordic resistance movement in Sweden, because a lot of our members have moved there, and it's like in the heart of Sweden, so to speak. So we had a big demonstration there, and last year we had it in Falun, also in Dalarna, in the same area, so to speak. But this year we're actually going to have two demonstrations on the 1st of May, the first one will take place at Ludvika, another small town in Dalarna, and the other one will take place in the northern part of Sweden, in Boden. So we will have two major demonstrations this year, and as you said, it's never been done before, but we have grown in a significant level these last years, so it's about time that we try to do this. Yeah, I think it will be great, actually. So, and we will show that we're not an organization that have to focus everything on one place. We can actually do two big demonstrations at the same time.
That's great. Yeah. So, what do you guys think about the? Because there was the last time there was some issues in Gothenburg specifically with the police and, yeah, and the treatment, and you guys couldn't walk your designated path and all that kind of stuff. Are you guys expecting more of the same, or what's your outlook on this?
It's hard to tell, because these kind of problems with the police, it's usually connected to the bigger cities like Stockholm or Gothenburg. We have had zero incidents in our demonstrations in smaller cities like the last couple of May demonstration we had in Dalarna. There has been no incidents with the police or with counter demonstrators or anything. But it's kind of hard to tell, because at the same time, this demonstration we had in Gothenburg, it was beforehand, the police chief of Gothenburg, he made this new rules about hate speech. And he said that if you act in a group in a certain way, it can count as hate speech, because some people might feel that it's threatening. And he was talking about, you know, marching in formation, as he called it, or using our symbol, the T-rune, and having shields and having certain symbols and so on. He said none of these things individually are criminal. They're not a crime. But if you combine them, if you see them as a group, that is a crime. And I think that was going on in Gothenburg, because the police afterwards, they said that they were going to lure us into like a part of Gothenburg, and there they were going to try to arrest everyone. Now that didn't happen, because the pictures you're showing now, that happened. There was a confrontation with the police before we even got to the place where we were supposed to start the demonstration. So they actually arrested I think a dozen of our guys who got cut off from the rest of the demonstration, and then they released them. But now we have a prosecutor in Sweden who actually is trying to charge, I think, 16 members of the Nordic Resistance Movement, a lot of them prominent members, leaders, and so on, for hate speech. And the prosecutor, he's not speaking clearly about exactly what the crime is here, but he's talking in the same way as this police chief did. He said that it's connected to our symbol and the way it was used, and when we were marching from this place back to our cars. And he also said that this crime that he's accusing them for, it's not a crime that will, it will not just be about paying a fine, it will be prison time. Mm. We will see what will happen, because of course we will plan our demonstration for the 1st of May, and they will look, and we will use, as we always demonstrate, and we will use our symbols, and no one can take that away from us. But yeah, I think that the police in Sweden, in the small towns, they are more reasonable. They're not like the big city police in Sweden, who are more, you know, they're more political, they're more on the edge, as you can see. They like to
look at that.
Fight,
he just slapped him right over the knee there. If you just go, let me show that again. Let me go back a little bit here. Look at that. He just right there. Look at that. He just takes his baton and wraps him right on the knee there. But do you think that this scenario would have been avoided if they just simply allowed you guys to go the designated route? I mean, who started what here? It seems that the police are just trying to block you guys off, and you guys didn't want to stand down. You were trying to stand your ground and just march through. But could this have been avoided, do you think? Was it what's the police responsibility in a situation like this?
Yeah, of course. I mean, everything went wrong from the start because, as I said, this police chief went out beforehand and threatened everyone to get arrested. He said, don't act like that. Don't wear symbols. Don't dress similar to each other and so on. We had a Jewish parish who tried to overrule the permit to demonstrate because they thought that our demonstration were too close to their synagogue. So they said this is unacceptable, and the court actually took their side and said no, they can't march there because they had this Yom Kippur thing going on there in Gothenburg this day.
They thought there was all a plan, right? They thought, well, you guys are doing it at this date and you're marching through that area because you want to go there and like vandalize it or something. I think they made up that like conspiracy that it was all intended for them. As far as I know it, you guys didn't give a shit about that. You just wanted, you know, you had your path. You wanted to do your thing, right?
No, because the path that was originally planned, it was further away from the synagogue, but then the police said that that's not acceptable because they didn't want us to go in the central parts of Gothenburg. So they actually changed the route so it was closer to the synagogue.
Right.
So this whole synagogue walking close to the synagogue thing, it was actually the police's plan. When they changed the original idea where we were going to walk. So it's a very long story.
Got some police in Sweden then, huh?
Yeah.
From the beginning, the demonstration was, it's going to be 2 kilometers, I think it was, around 2 kilometers or something. And then the police keep changing the demonstration route. And Simon told about the route came closer to the Jewish congregation there. And in the end, the demonstration route was down to 600 meters or something. So from 2,000 meters to 600 meters. And when the demonstration train is... it's almost as long as the demonstration route, so it's just silly to make it so short. And before the demonstration, the leaders of Nordic Resistance Movement, someone told them that the police should plan to lure them into a street and trap them there. And on that street, they plan to take the flags from Nordic Resistance Movement. And they know it should provoke the Nordic Resistance Movement so they could start to use violence against them. So that was the plan. And because the leaders know that, they choose to not go that way. So it was because of that they turned in another direction there.
I see.
Wasn't it like that, Simon?
Yeah, it was like that. And as you said earlier, the demonstration at the end turned out to be a joke because it was planned like a normal march. But because of all this, the complaints from the Jewish congregation of Gothenburg, and there was also a soccer game going on there in Gothenburg, and they also said they didn't want us to walk past the football stadium. 600 we were allowed to walk 600 meters, so at the end there wasn't any kind of demonstration. So it was you know, everything went wrong from the beginning, of course, and at that place there were actually some Antifa starting to throwing things at the people walking in the demonstration. So it was also a question about, you know, protecting them, and you know, it was just, it erupted violence against the police, and then they boxed us in and held us there for hours.
Yeah.
The police have investigated, a lot of police had body cameras, and they can't really see that anyone committed a crime here. But now they are claiming that when they in the end said, okay, you can walk back to your cars, then 16 persons, I don't know why just these 16 persons are singled out, but they have committed hate crime by bearing our symbol in some way. So it's very strange, and I don't know. You can see here this guy, they use a lot of pepper spray. I got some on myself as well. I was acting as a journalist, but the police didn't care. They were swinging at everyone that they saw. I have never seen police this violent as in Gothenburg. They were really, and you could also see that because they had the police from different part of Sweden there. You had police troops from Stockholm there, and they were actually arguing amongst themselves. So you could hear some police say, "Oh, calm down! What are you doing? What the hell are you doing? Calm down!" When they were, swinging hilarious. It was chaos.
Kindergarten. Sweden, yeah, the kindergarten playground, you know, it's just bullshit, yeah.
This demonstration was not about their synagogue or Yom Kippur or anything. Yeah. It was about, you know, it's hard to translate into English, but the parole was revolt against the criminals, and the criminals, of course, are the globalists or the people in power. That was the parole of the march. So, but this two demonstrations that we're having on the 1st of May, it's the parole there. It's, we are no politician, we are the people. And it's the same parole that we're going to now when we're coming to the election, because this is the first time the Nordic Resistance Movement have official candidates for the resistance. We have a registered party now, and we will, of course, we will focus mainly on local assemblies this election, and we already have representatives in a couple of city councils in Dalarna, that place I was talking about. So the demonstration this 1st of May will be a lot about the election, and I think it will be great. And no nationalistic or national socialist organization in Sweden has ever had two demonstrations at the same time, at the same day before. So we will write history this year. I think it will be great.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to wrap up here just in a little bit. But before we do that, kind of a last point, I guess, I just want to ask you guys why you think that they haven't just flat out banned the Nordic Resistance Movement. We've seen similar actions in the UK with the group called National Action, where I think they were designated a terrorist group and the group was dissolved. It would be a crime to be part of it. We have seen similar things when it comes to this in Finland too. The branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement in Finland have been banned, and they've also attacked. You guys said the symbol itself, right? That the Tur rune is a. I mean, and this is a whole discussion in itself. But this is just so amazing, ridiculous that, you know, more and more symbols that are being used, that was used by our ancestors, are being deemed hate symbols one after another, right? They've managed to do this. Well, of course, you have other symbols. Let's not even talk about the crescent moon and the star of Islam, of how much murder and bloodshed that this symbol has associated with it. Even the Jewish Star of David has it. Most religions have it, frankly, but there's many other symbols as well. But, you know, as usual, it's Nordic symbols that are kind of singled out in this case. But let's just talk about this before we round up here a little bit, guys. And we, by the way, we have Simon joining in just through audio right now because the connection was so bad. So that's why we don't have video on Tobias joining us here. Sorry. Yeah. But yeah, so talk to us about that, this, guys. What's the reason, Simon? Let's begin with you. How are they moving forward with banning you guys? Because they could just do that, right?
Sure. I guess you could say that it's not a question about if they will ban us. It's more of a question when they will ban us. And when they did it in Finland, I was actually surprised that they did it now, because when they have, if they do it, in Finland, the final word is not said because the higher court will have to make a decision about it. But when they have used that method, they can't really use it again. Because, of course, right now, I guess they could ban us, but they can't forbid us from organizing. They understand that we would just regroup. The resistance will of course, never die. So I think that's one part of it. The other part is that the constitution, as you didn't want to call it a constitution, and I guess you're right about that, it doesn't leave out room for you know just forbidding an organization like that. So they tried different methods. For instance, we have the hate speech law in Sweden. It's called Hets mot folkgrupp, and I guess if you want to translate that into English, it's like
agitation against another ethnic group, I guess, or
yeah, against a minority or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually in from the National Prosecutor's Authority, they have this document where they talk about this law, and there they say that this law is actually not really about protecting minorities. It's about trying to mess with organizations like the Nordic resistance movements to paralyze them so that we can't, you know, express our opinions and we can't act the way we want to act and so on. So they use this law instead to try to undermine us all the time instead of just straight out banning us, because that wouldn't be the most effective. Because if they were to ban us, we could just, you know, start another organization or, you know, go underground or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what strategy the organization would use, but I guess there's plenty of different directions to take from there. And from the system's point of view, none of them would be very good, I think. So I think that's why they haven't done it. They will try to continue to, you know, attack us. They will try to make us lose our jobs. They will, you know, write lying articles about us. They will put our names and photo on the in the newspapers and say these are horrible people. They're racist. They're hating. They're criminals and so on and so on. Try to scare us to silence. Of course, that hasn't worked, and we have only grown stronger from this kind of attacks. And in the organization, there's more or less, there's a very sound culture. When these kind of attacks happen, it only strengthens the organization. Everyone is prepared for them all the time. So there's really no effect. But I think they will try to ban us at some point, of course. And when they try to ban us, they will not only ban us, they will probably ban us from organizing as well, and or probably lock us up or something like that. But I don't think the time is here at this point, but it will come.
Well, I mean, what's an open, tolerant society supposed to do? Huh? They have to adopt authoritarian measures in order to shut down political opposition. It truly is extraordinary how many Western countries, they pride themselves on their tradition of free speech and freedom of opinion and not being persecuted because of your, you know, beliefs or anything like that. But we're truly entering into a period right now where their failures are beginning to show, and organizations such as yours are showing up and basically in some departments, if you will, picking up the slack and saying that this is not unsustainable, this is not working, the country is paralyzed, it's not functioning anymore. These people are insane that are sitting at the top of the power, and something has to change. And as more and more violence continues and that the situation just kind of derails, I think that they will try to take any measures that they can to stop you guys from showing that you are kind of successful, if you will, to organize. What do you think, Tobias?
Yes, it's exactly as Simon summed it up. It's a question about time. And when an organization is small, it's allowed to think differently, but when it's bigger and more effective, it's not. So it's gonna come.
All right, guys. Well, should we wrap up there? It was great having you both here and talking a bit about it. Well, actually, one last thing, Simon. Is there anything else you want to say about the upcoming election, 2018? you guys are there? Are you going to be on the ballot? What's going on with those things? Are people going to be able to actually vote for the party or for people in the party? What's happening there? Tell us about it.
Yeah, you will be able to vote with us for the national election, but of course, you should do that. But we are focusing on the local elections, specifically at Boden, the place where we're going to have one of our demonstrations on the 1st of May, and in Ludvika, where we are very rooted in that town, actually, you could say in all of Dalarna, the county that's called Dalarna. And I think there we have our best chance because we already have, from the last election, Per Öberg, who I think has been a guest on this show earlier.
Yeah.
He already has a mandate in the city council of Ludvika. He brought himself up on another party's list, the Sweden Democrats. You were able to do that in the last election. So he is already a local politician there, and he has showed the people there that he is a man of true opposition against the madness, and he's very popular among the locals and so on. So, and also in Kungälv, which is
in my hometown.
It's next to Gothenburg.
It's a conspiracy, folks. Town. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That's funny. Why Kungälv? Tell us about that just briefly. It's just fun for me to know. Because there is some establishment there. There's a lot of people. Is there a lot of people from there that were Nordic Resistance Movement members?
In Kungälv, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a small town, so to say, and it has a tradition of nationalism, and it's in some way it's have been a symbol for the system as well, because in the 90s, some skinheads, they murdered a guy there. It had nothing to do with politics. It was just, you know, drunken madness and so on. So they have used Kungälv like as a symbol of how wrong things can go when it comes to hate and racism and so on. But I think in Kungälv, the people there are, as well as in Dalarna and in Ludvika, they're more nationalistic than most parts of Sweden. So I think we will have a good chance there as well. And we have a very good candidate, Fredrik Weideland. He's part of the national leadership for the Nordic Resistance Movement in Sweden. But also, I think in Boden, in the northern part of Sweden, where I live, it's a town close to my hometown. We have a candidate, Bo Nilsson, who is a veteran in the nationalistic movement in Sweden. He was actually he don't like to call himself a founder of the Sweden Democrats, but in the beginning, when the Sweden Democrats were like a more nationalistic party, he was one of the leaders there, and he has been there from start. And he a funny thing is he was actually a suspect in the murder of Olof Palme, a social democratic prime minister we had, who was very hated in Sweden.
Yeah.
He was actually a suspect because he was one of the most outspoken critics of Olof Palme in the 80s. So he was actually, interrogated by the secret police about that. He wasn't guilty, though. But he has been around for a while, and he is from Boden. He's very well known there. He is very well liked amongst the good people of Boden. And the local groups here in our Nest, it's called Nest 6, who is the local area of the Nordic Resistance Movement in the northern part of Sweden. We have visited Boden and we have talked to the people there, and they like Bo Nilsson, and I think he also has a good chance. So we're focusing our energy at these local elections. But of course, you should vote for the Nordic Resistance Movement also in the national election for the national parliament. And the reason why is that that is what sends the strongest signal to the power holders of the society. If you just use your vote on the Sweden Democrats, which I suspect a lot of our supporters are thinking about doing, your vote won't make much of a difference, because they will still have a lot of votes, and they will grow from the last election, and the system, they won't take notice about that. But if you say that the Nordic resistance movement would have like even 1% or 2% or anything like that, we don't even have to get into the parliament. That would send a strong signal to the power holders, the politicians, the media lords, the Bonnier family and everyone, that the people of Sweden are tired of this madness. They want change. They want radical change. Because we at the Nordic Resistance Movement, we stand for radical change. We want to make a whole new kind of society based on national socialism. And we don't just want to change, you know, the ministers or the members of parliament. We want to make a better world for our people, for the whole, all of the Nordic countries. We want to unite the Nordic countries to one nation and, you know, fulfill our destiny, so to speak.
Great. Tobias, what do you want to add to this?
I think Simon said it all. I'm going to vote on the Nordic Resistance Movement. That's for sure. Yeah.
Final comment, guys, before we wrap up here. We did have a new party that showed up, the Alternative for Sweden. Do you guys see this as competition? Are you guys feeling that they will take away votes from you guys as people are losing kind of, I guess, hope in the Sweden? I mean, let's just face it, the Sweden Democrats, as you said, Simon, they're completely derailing. They're cucking. They're just useless at this point. And you know, I guess it's good that there's option, but it also helps to water down things. So what's the relationship there?
Yeah, of course. There's always this danger that they will take votes from us, of course. And their political platform is, I wouldn't say that it's bad. They have some very good points. They're not as radical as we are. They are more or less like an alternative to the Sweden Democrats. They are more like the Sweden Democrats were like 20 years ago or something like that. So, of course, it was a bad timing for us. You can't deny that. But I hope that when it comes to election day, the people will see what organization has been there for 20 years and has been on the streets and fighting for their interests with very hard opposition from the police, from the politicians, from the media, and never back down even once. That has been the way of the Nordic Resistance Movement from the beginning. Uncompromising, radical struggle for the Nordic race and for the Nordic nations. And I think in the end, if you look past this, just this election, that will surely grant us victory. And one day, I think that I'm sure that the Nordic Resistance Movement will free the Nordic peoples from the tyrants who are in power of the Nordic countries today. I think so.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that the country is in shambles, and at some point, at some time, there's going to need to be people and organizations that are willing to step up and take the responsibility of trying to basically keep things together, because I think where our current politicians are taking us is just down a path of nightmare. We're already halfway there, but it certainly can get much worse from this point. So I hope that people out there are thinking about this. I hope that you're are aware just how dire our situation is, and that you will use that power that you at this point have to go to vote for the party that you believe in, and you know, truly make some changes, because we're gonna need it, guys. So it's good to have people there that are willing to stand for what they believe in and speak the truth as they see it. That's what it's about. I think we've ended up in this situation because we have too many people that are both obviously corrupt, but they're kowtowing to political correctness, and they're trying to be, you know, just bowing down to whatever the globalists want to, and look at the end results. It's no good. So thank you guys for joining us. Keep up the good work, and we'll sure to speak soon enough again. Thank you, Simon and Tobias, for coming on today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, there you have it, boys and girls. Thank you for watching or for listening today. Really appreciate it. Please keep in mind, if you want to support us, head on over to redicemembers.com, sign up for a membership. You can check out all our shows going back to 2006. We have exclusive videos available for our members. We also have Weekend Warrior, our news roundup show that we do for members as well. So definitely check it out so we can continue bringing you shows, reports, and videos like these. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you guys soon. Take care.